The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
It's time to get organized this new year with Menards. Update your closet system and add style today with Closet Culture. Choose from two closet finishes and four colors of shelf boards to create a functional yet stylish closet solution that matches your home decor. Check out all our Closet Culture closet kits or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com to see all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey guys, and welcome to Mysteries and Histories with me, your host, Georgia Marie. This podcast audio is adapted from my YouTube channel. I wanted to make my content more accessible for those of you on the go, and we all love a podcast. So if I ever reference anything on screen or a photograph, please bear in mind this audio was originally made for video. It won't hinder your listening experience at all, but just to save any confusion. And if you do want to go and subscribe to my channel, I'm just Georgia Marie over on YouTube. And with that, let's get into it. Hey guys, and welcome back. If you're new here, my name's Georgia, and on my platforms here on the internet, I mostly talk about unsolved true crime. I don't often cover solved cases on my platforms because I truly believe there's so much more importance to sharing cold cases, unsolved murders, unidentified people. There's so much value in spreading the word of these cases. However, I do occasionally like to do a solved case to remind us all that there is light at the end of the tunnel, to show how even the tiniest thing can be the missing puzzle piece that provides all the answers. In today's case, the case of Leslie Herring, that tiny one thing was a Starbucks receipt. Without it, her killer would likely still be walking the streets. When she disappeared in early February 2009, Leslie was a 44-year-old woman living in Hollywood Hills, California with her husband, Lyle Herring. She'd been born in Guyana in March 1964 and she'd moved to the USA with her family at just 4 years old. They were chasing the American dream and they settled in Maryland. Clearly this brought forward something in Leslie about wanting to see the world, and over the course of her education she would spend time at schools in Barbados, Montreal and Paris. When she was younger she loved new experiences, but as she got older she very much settled into her routine. According to her sister Asha, she had great angles, she looked at the world very distinctly, and she was opinionated. Leslie saw the world through her own lens, and she was so incredibly loved by everyone who knew her. At the time of her disappearance, Leslie was working at a company called Simplex Grinnell, a fire alarm and security company in LA, and she'd been there for 11 years. She was a very hard worker and a very reliable employee. She never missed a single day of work in all that time. Colleagues actually loved her so much that when they left the company, they would give Leslie their hard hat and she displayed them all proudly on a shelf above her desk, like her children. I think a big part of what people loved so much about Leslie was that she was reliable, not just at work, but in her day-to-day life as well. She was always the mother hen, she was always the one making sure that everyone else was happy. Her sister Asha told a story of how they would always barbecue on the weekends, and because Leslie was so organised, she'd be the one bringing all the things that she knew people would forget. That was just the kind of person that she was. She was also a fantastic storyteller, always telling these amazing stories that her sister always bugged her to write down, and they had dreams of one day having their own version of The Office, the TV show. So clearly Leslie was close with her sister, but she was also close with her brother Lyndon, who she spoke to all the time. And she also called her mum Vivian twice a day during the week, and they would chat and pray together every day for 10 years until the day she disappeared. Vivian still lived in Maryland, Leslie was obviously in California, but she really made the effort to talk to her mum all the time. Leslie was really not the kind of person who would just go off grid for a few days and not let anyone know. Her family knew where she was all the time, and she wanted them to know. Even at 44 years old, there was a comfort in her family knowing where she was. She'd married her husband, Lyle Herring, in 1998, having met him less than a year beforehand in a 99-cent store, which is a wild meet-cute, but Leslie loved it. Lyle was a college recruiter at Cal State Northridge, and to anyone on the outside, it appeared they had a really good life together. They lived in a condo in the Hollywood Hills, it looked like they made good money, the house was always very clean and tidy. They seemed really happy. They even had a 60-foot sailboat that they loved to take out together. They just appeared to be wildly in love, even 10 years into their marriage. I mean, they were even known to go out in matching outfits, very much the idea of the perfect couple. But behind closed doors, things weren't all that perfect. Vivian, Leslie's mum, would say that she was very close to the couple, and Leslie would tell her when they argued, which wasn't all too often, but as a lot of people in relationships do, Leslie very much did have her complaints. I mean, I think that's normal in long-term relationships, you're always going to have your gripes, but as long as you communicate and you talk about it, that's generally okay. Vivian would later say that she wasn't aware of any domestic violence or anything awful happening behind the scenes, but Leslie did sometimes complain that Lyle was uncommunicative and just very irresponsible with money. And as time went on, her complaints started to get worse, eventually confiding in her mum that she wasn't sure she loved Lyle anymore. She just couldn't see herself spending the rest of her life with him. Vivian responded by telling her daughter that it was very dangerous to just tell a man you're going to leave him, instead advising Leslie to just up and leave if that's what she wanted to do, to deal with the fallout at a later date. Although Vivian did say that she never knew of any actual violence between the couple, I do wonder if there was this underlying fear or threat of violence with Lyle, because this does seem like very extreme advice to give, but maybe that's just what Vivian's own life experience had taught her. But despite this being her advice, Vivian said she always believed that the couple loved each other. Maybe they were just going through a rough time. From 2006 or 2007, every single month, Leslie would donate $50 to a church in Maryland where her mum still lived. Leslie was a deeply religious woman, and with every donation, she enclosed prayer requests. The last donation they received was dated January 1st, 2009, accompanied by a request that they pray for her because her and her husband were having problems. And then, on the morning of Monday, 9th of February 2009, Leslie failed to turn up to work for the first time ever. And then she didn't turn up the next day either. Her employers couldn't get hold of her and they knew this was crazily out of character for Leslie, so they contacted Asha. Asha Davis is actually an actress, probably best known for her roles in Friday Night Lights, Grey's Anatomy and Drunk History. And her sort of small level of celebrity would come in very helpful when later spreading the word of Leslie's disappearance. But first and foremost, she was Leslie's sister. Asha would later say that it made her very nervous and uncomfortable when she heard that Leslie hadn't turned up to work, because that just wasn't like her. At this point in her life, Leslie was a creature of habit. She didn't go anywhere without telling people, and doing something new was very unusual behaviour for her. Immediately, Asha knew that something must have happened, that her sister was in danger. There are all sorts of people in this world. There are the people who might skip out on work for a day and go on an adventure and not tell anyone, paying no mind to the consequences. There are the people who might just forget to turn up to work, who might just get sick and forget to call in. That was not Leslie. She would have let someone know. So that evening, on Tuesday the 10th of February, Asha and her husband Jesse go to Leslie's condo to check in on her, but no one answers the door. They notice her car, her Toyota Corolla, in its usual parking space, and they find the hood cool to the touch, indicating that it just hadn't been driven recently. And naturally, the lack of answer at the door makes them believe that Lyle's not home either, but they would later say they thought they saw his car, a Mitsubishi Montero, start to approach the complex and then abruptly swerve away. By this point, Asher wasn't the only family member who'd noticed Leslie's absence. The day before, Lyle had left a voicemail for Vivian asking her if she'd seen Leslie. Once she received this message, she tried to call him back as well as calling Leslie multiple times as well, but neither of them pick up. I'm really not sure at which point Asher and Vivian speak, if they'd already spoken before Asher received the call from Leslie's work, but I'm sure that by this evening, their panic is really taking over. And so, Asher reports her sister as missing to the police, who the next day conduct a welfare check at the condo. They just sort of do a knock on the door, but they report that nothing appears to be unusual, despite the fact that neither Lyle or Leslie are anywhere to be seen. Asher texts them both to inform them of this incoming police visit, but once again, neither of them respond. So the very next day, she files an official missing persons report. Over the next few days, the family really jump into action. They start putting up flyers and they also start a blog in the hope that this will help spread the word to find Leslie and at this point also Lyle, who's also seemingly disappeared. The police don't actually conduct a proper search of the condo until February 13th, which is the Friday, and this is where an investigation truly starts. It is kind of a difficult one, I suppose, when adults disappear, because a married couple do have the right to just pop off on holiday for a few days without telling anyone if they don't want to, but this is kind of where the nuances of personality come into it. As I've said previously, for some that's normal behaviour, for others it was not. But with Leslie not being heard from for 5 whole days now, it was very clear that this was something that required further investigation. Investigators don't really find anything wildly unusual in the condo when they go in, but there are a few things that made them pay attention in Leslie's usually spotless home. The first thing they spotted was spilled wax on the kitchen counter, as if a candle had fallen up and nobody had bothered to clean it. Everyone agreed that if Leslie was able to, she would have cleaned this up immediately.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
In the bathroom, investigators spotted a number of towels hung up that were kind of crinkly, like they'd been used to mop up a load of water and had just been hung up haphazardly to dry. Again, it's not anything crazy, but it's not what you'd expect to see in Leslie's house. She was so clean. In a bedroom closet, they find Leslie's purse, which contained a number of pieces of jewellery, which were mostly Guyanese, that she tended to wear on a daily basis. She never took this jewellery off apart from to sleep. And this was a massive sign to everyone that something bad had happened, because no one ever saw her without this jewellery. I mean, this is something I can relate to. I've always got on my rings, my necklace, my anklet, my earrings. I don't even take them off to sleep. If you find my rings on my bedside table and me nowhere to be found, that is your sign that something bad has happened to me. Like, I literally haven't taken off this ring since I was 21 years old. However, I'm finding my fiancé's rings in new fun locations around the house every other day because that's just who she is as a person, but it's not who I am. Some things that might seem so insignificant for some are hugely concerning for others. Again, this is where the nuance of personality comes into things. But the jewellery wasn't the only strange thing inside that purse, because they also find a receipt from Starbucks dated February 9th, 2009 at 9:17 p.m. Now by this point in the investigation, they'd already been able to confirm that the last time anyone had spoken to Leslie was Saturday the 7th of February. She'd spoken to her brother Lyndon on the phone that morning around 8 a.m. and he claimed she was her usual self. A repairman at the condo, Ramos Flores, also said that he spoke to Leslie around noon that day when he came in to fix a leak, and he noted that she did seem a bit strange and sad, feeling a tension between her and Lyle. After that point, she wasn't seen or spoken to ever again. So a Starbucks receipt being found in her purse for 2 days after she'd not turned up for work earlier that day definitely caught investigators' attention, and they made a note to investigate this further. But again, this probably wasn't the most interesting thing they found, because on her nightstand, they also found a handwritten letter. This letter screamed alarm bells. Leslie had written, "No one should have to live this way, live day to day not knowing if they will have a roof or the other necessities of life. I deserve better. I deserve more. What's the point of talking to you? So you can lie, lie, lie? I have survived many horrible situations that you have put me through, but each time the experience left me more damaged. I don't think I could recover from that last experience. I can't take any more. I am broken." We know that Leslie had previously mentioned money worries to her mum, how Lyle was very irresponsible with money, but this letter made it clear that it went deeper than anyone realised. Leslie was deeply, deeply unhappy, and she was worried they were going to lose their house, that they weren't going to be able to look after themselves anymore. According to later court documents, Lyle constantly started and then closed businesses, which frightened very financially responsible Leslie. She couldn't live with that level of uncertainty. So after searching the house, investigators move on to Leslie's car, and in the boot they find her wallet containing a number of very important items: her driver's license, her mobile phone, her medical and insurance cards, and her house and car keys. The types of things that someone just heading off for a few days would probably take with them. Finally, on February 19th, they brought in a cadaver dog called Indiana Bones to see if she alerted to anything at the scene. She didn't alert anything in the condo, around where the cars were parked, in the entrance to the condo, or in the elevator closest to the condo, but she did alert to the base of the trash chute in the complex, although not at the access point nearest to the condo. The next day, Indiana Bones and the team went to the tow yard where Leslie's car, the Mitsubishi Montero, and Lyle's Toyota were now being kept. The doors of the cars were open, and Indy soon went to Lyle's car and alerted to an area of the rear of the vehicle where the floor carpeting kind of meets the plastic trim at the edge. Items in the boot were then removed, and Indy cleared each of them. He didn't alert to any other part of the car and instead just kept returning to that one spot. He didn't alert to anything in Leslie's car or a third car that was also there. By this point in the investigation, police have already started to look down some of your sort of standard investigative alleys. They'd done an analysis of Leslie and Lyle's cell phone records that showed that on February 7th, which is the last day that Leslie was seen alive, there was a cluster of activity on her cell phone throughout the morning, and then it just stops. At 5:21 p.m, Lyle's phone calls Leslie's. Then the next recorded activity on Leslie's phone is the next morning at 8:14 a.m, where her phone calls Lyle's, and then he calls hers back again at 10:57 p.m. For each of these calls, the phones connect to the cell tower closest to the condo, indicating to investigators that the caller was holding both phones at the time the calls were made, or at the very, very least, at the time these calls were made, they were both inside the home. Why would a couple be calling each other in a condo when they can just shout from room to room? They look at Leslie's credit cards and bank accounts, finding there was no human-directed account activity, apart from 5 payments onto credit cards made from Lyle's accounts. He pays the minimum amount due on the cards, although before this point, Leslie had always made sure to pay off the balance in full. They look at a computer in Lyle's car and find a number of very concerning searches, including suicide by harming oneself, murder and suicide, searches about travelling to Mexico and Belize, and even what country should I flee to? Yes, really, he searched that. His phone would later be searched as well, finding searches such as profile of a mass murderer, violent death in the soul, and top 10 common methods of suicide. And then we come back round to the Starbucks receipt, as found in Leslie's purse. Investigators rushed to Starbucks to check their surveillance footage before it was automatically wiped, expecting to see Leslie enter the shop just after 9 p.m. on the Monday night. But it wasn't her, it was Lyle. He came in alone, bought a single drink, and then left, receipt in hand. Then when he got home for some strange reason, he placed the receipt in Leslie's purse in the closet. It was around this point that it became abundantly clear to investigators what was going on. Was Lyle trying to plant red herrings? Was he trying to create his own timeline here, hoping that the police would only find the receipt once the surveillance footage had already been written over? Although up until this point, police had already thought the situation around Lyle was just a bit odd, it was here that they really started to consider that he may have had something to do with Leslie's disappearance. But whilst Leslie was missing, Lyle was too. He hadn't been seen since Leslie was reported as missing, but one of his vehicles was also missing, so it was kind of just assumed that he'd driven away somewhere. And then 2 weeks later, he stopped in his car crossing the Mexico-US border, trying to drive from Mexico back into the USA with a brand new license plate. He was also found to be in possession of a gun holster, but no gun, a Valentine's Day card reading with love for my wife, and a will with copies for Leslie, Vivian, and his son, Lyle Jr., which was his son from a previous relationship before Leslie. Lyle was quickly brought in for questioning, and his story was found to be very weak from the beginning. I mean, he was known for these very long dreadlocks that he had. He'd had them for many, many years. And one of the very first things that caught investigators' eyes is the fact that now he'd cut them off. He had a buzz cut very close to the head. When he was asked about this, he said that he owed money to some very shady characters who cut his dreadlocks off as a punishment, and apparently shaved his goatee as well. As one of the investigators would point out to Crime Watch Daily, this just isn't really something that would ever happen. Detective Chris Gable said that he'd worked in the gang unit for several years and he'd never heard of any punishment like this, like cutting off dreadlocks. Gang members are likely to go for something a little bit more violent. But whilst this was undeniably weird, it wasn't illegal. They had no solid evidence on which to arrest Lyle. He said that the last time he saw his wife was the Sunday morning when they'd had an argument and Leslie just got up and left. He stated that she takes off like this all the time, that this was very normal behaviour for her. However, that contradicts everything else said by anyone else who knew her. Leslie was not a spontaneous woman. He also said that he'd travelled to Mexico to go and search for Leslie and they had plans to go there for a trip over Valentine's Day. Apparently, when she just disappeared, he wondered if she'd gone on holiday without him, so he followed her there. Vivian would later say that Leslie never mentioned anything to her about any trip they had planned, something which he would usually discuss in lots of detail. Obviously, even this early on, investigators did think that Lyle had something to do with Leslie's disappearance, but they just didn't have a body. All the evidence was just circumstantial and a bit strange. They had to let him go. But when Detective Gables later retraced Lyle's movements in Mexico, it was noted that he never asked after his wife, nor did he report her as missing in either Mexico or LA. Knowing that something was up with this guy, they decided to put a tracker on his vehicle, just in case he happened to do anything strange in the coming days, hoping that he might lead them to where Leslie's body may be. And sure enough, just 3 days later, Lyle leads them to a remote area of Griffith Park in the Los Feliz neighbourhood of LA. Indiana Bones is brought back in and gets a positive hit on a dirt mound near a number of dumpsters. Sadly, bodies are quite often found in Griffith Park, so it wasn't out of the question that this mound could indeed be Leslie's burial site. However, after bringing in experts to dig and search the area, they found nothing. This was another dead end. Since this point, the question has always sort of hung in the air as to whether Leslie's body maybe ended up in one of the dumpsters there instead of in the ground. And if that's the case, she would have ended up in one of the very large LA tips with very little chance of ever being found. The same day Lyle returned from Mexico, so February 25th, the team returned to the tow yard again with Indiana Bones to search Lyle's second car, his Cadillac. Now the situation around the second car is a bit complicated, but it seems like since the disappearance, the car had actually been in the care of Lyle's son, Lyle Jr. Indiana Bones alerted to the driver's side floor mat, the floor in the backseat area where some speaker wires were, and the trunk. When the mats were removed, she also alerted to the driver's side, the rear passenger, and the trunk mats. She also alerted to a hole from which speaker wires protruded. That is a lot for a dog to alert to in a single car. It was very clear that Leslie or somebody had been in this car. By this time, investigators knew they had to find Leslie, either dead or alive. Otherwise, there wasn't going to be much to go on in this case. But they knew the likelihood was that they wouldn't be finding her alive. They also knew that Lyle, at the very least, knew more than he was letting on. So in March, the family and police held a press conference calling for information about Leslie's whereabouts. And this is the first time that Leslie's family see Lyle in person since everything happened.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app, with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The police asked Lyle to speak to the press, knowing that he couldn't reasonably refuse their request. They hoped that by putting his face out to the public, potential witnesses might come forward. At this time, publicly, investigators are saying that Lyle was not being considered a suspect, and instead they're looking into claims that threats have been made against Leslie's life from people who Lyle owed money to. But privately, they're watching his every move, trying to piece together his movements in the days after Leslie's disappearance, in the days before he went to Mexico. One of the first people they speak to is Lyle's cousin, Malcolm Thomas, who had a lot of very interesting things to say. On the Monday, when Leslie failed to turn up to work, Lyle called Malcolm and shared that he was tired of his job as a recruiter at the university, that he'd been passed over for a promotion and he was going to check out. Scared that Lyle intended to harm himself, Malcolm went to meet with him, where it was repeated multiple times that he was sick of everything and he was done. Whenever Malcolm asked about Leslie, Lyle responded, "Don't ask me any questions about Leslie." The next day, Lyle and Malcolm meet up once again around 5:30 p.m, along with Lyle's son, Lyle Jr. Lyle appeared to be very tense and worried at this meeting, saying that he wanted to give away some of his things, some to Malcolm and his car, the Cadillac, to his son. Malcolm mentions that this doesn't make any sense because if anything happens to Lyle, the items would automatically go to his wife. But once again, Lyle is unwilling to talk about her. At 7:30 p.m, the three men return to the condo complex, at which point Lyle Jr. is given the Cadillac. But before handing the car over, he takes a number of items out of the back, including a duffel bag, a backpack, and a clear plastic bag containing denim jeans, a woman's maroon top, and women's tennis shoes. Malcolm would later testify in court that upon seeing these items, he had a very bad feeling and asked if he could go up to the condo to use the bathroom, intending to check up on Leslie. But Lyle denies his request, saying, "Let me think about that for a moment. I don't think that'll be a good idea." Malcolm and Lyle leave the complex together, with Lyle pulling a jacket over his head as they were travelling, saying that there were people who he doesn't want to see him. Apparently he just keeps repeating that he's going to do something that he can't come back from, saying he's going to burn in hell for it, but Vivian will be taken care of and he's going to change his beneficiaries to Lyle Jr. and Malcolm. Malcolm said all of this was very strange behaviour, but he was concerned for Lyle's life if he didn't go along with what he was saying, noting that he was wearing a gun holster around his ankle. Malcolm said, "It looked like there was something in it. I was scared. I didn't want to say the wrong thing. I don't know what would have happened." Shortly before Lyle, Lyle Jr. and Malcolm were all at the condo, Asher would have been there knocking at the door, trying to get a hold of her sister. If you recall, she said that she thought she saw Lyle's car driving towards the complex before it suddenly swerved away. And Malcolm would back this up, saying that he and Lyle had been driving in separate cars to the condo, but Lyle had abruptly and unexpectedly turned left instead of right as they approached. He thought this was weird, but he kind of again just went along with it. After they left the complex, all three men headed to Lyle's office at Cal State in Northridge and they cleaned it out. Lyle told them that he'd received a bad performance review and a disciplinary memorandum. He was acting as if he was about to get fired, so he was kind of getting out ahead of it. But when the university was later contacted about this, they stated that despite the bad review, they had no plans to fire Lyle. And actually, he does end up continuing with this job. The next day was Wednesday the 11th of February, which is the day that Asher officially filed a missing persons report for Leslie. But meanwhile, investigations showed that Lyle checked into the Roadway Inn Hotel in Long Beach under the name Ralph Mitlands, checking out the very next day. He then goes straight to a barber, which is where he gets his dreadlocks cut off. This barber would say that he returned twice, saying that he wanted his dreads cut off because he'd been beaten up. But the barber said, it seemed as though he was trying to get me to remember something he'd not said on his first visit. He was acting strange and erratic, and this was proof that a gang member hadn't cut off his dreadlocks. He'd gone to a barber and paid for it himself. In the next few days, Lyle travels down to Mexico and speaks with a realtor there about purchasing a club in Rosarito Beach. This wasn't quite the search for his wife that he'd originally said he was down in Mexico for. The realtor said that he mentioned that he was a millionaire, that he had a lot of money, but he couldn't access it right now. Once again, this impulsiveness around money was rearing its head. Investigation also showed that he visited a UPS store in San Diego where he tried to get a will and testament notarized, saying to the person serving him that he's going to take himself out. And then just 3 days later, he's detained at the Mexico border, which is when he's first questioned. From the very beginning here, Lyle's story was weak, and it seems that investigators were onto him from the very beginning. But the fact that they couldn't find Leslie's body meant they knew they needed a really, really airtight case against Lyle before they could make any arrest. A murder trial generally begins and ends with the body. That is the biggest piece of evidence you're ever going to have. And not having a body complicates things immensely, especially when the majority of the evidence is circumstantial. Lyle had done some very, very strange things in the aftermath of Leslie's disappearance, sure, but the individual things he'd done weren't illegal, they weren't solid evidence of anything. But the full picture, that could be enough to convince a jury. This exhaustive investigation went on for 14 months, but by April 2010, they felt like they had enough. Lyle was arrested in his office at Cal State Northridge for the murder of Leslie. Days later, he pleads not guilty and the judge denies a request for release on bail. He is held on $1 million. Of course, the justice system moves incredibly slowly, so this case wasn't brought to trial until March 2013, but this did give the prosecution enough time to get an airtight case together. In his opening statement on March 14th, District Attorney Sam Huelfield states for the prosecution, "This is a case about a senseless and callous murder of an innocent wife by a calculating husband who tried hard to get away with it. It's a case about how that regular middle-aged woman vanished abruptly off the face of the earth 4 years ago, never to be seen or heard from again, because that husband that killed her got rid of her body successfully. It's about how that husband then started weighing his options, looking for a way out, and planning his escape from justice." He continues, "Don't expect to see Leslie Herring's body. There isn't one. We cannot produce one for you, and we're not going to ask you to reward the defendant for that." Inversely, attorney Marvin Hamilton for the defence opens, "What this is and nothing more is a missing person case built on loose circumstantial evidence." As the trial went on, prosecutors suggested that Lyle began to cover his tracks immediately after he killed Leslie as part of an elaborate misdirection. He went to Starbucks and planted the receipt and he called Vivian to ask after Leslie. But I suppose the big question is, how exactly did Leslie die? And that's a question nobody will ever know the answer to unless Lyle decides to open up. But investigators suspect that on the night of Saturday the 7th of February, Lyle drowned Leslie in their bathroom, as indicated by the lack of blood found in the condo and the very wet towels that have been hung up. A spilled wax in the kitchen suggests some sort of altercation leading up to it, or Lyle acting erratically in the aftermath. One of the biggest pieces of evidence at trial came in the form of a witness called Daniel Davison, who was a resident in the complex. In the early hours of Sunday morning, between 12:30 and 1 a.m, he was returning from walking his dog. Upon returning, he uses the far elevator, which is used much less frequently than the main elevator in the building. It's also the furthest from Leslie and Lyle's condo. The elevator stops at the first floor, which is where Daniel encounters Lyle, who is standing with a dolly on which he had a very large rug resting, describing it as 5 to 6 foot wide by 10 to 12 foot tall. Now, this wasn't tightly wrapped like a new rug would be, it actually wasn't bound at all. Daniel said that Lyle looked aggravated, dishevelled, in the zone, a little off, and crazed. Another neighbour, Michael Turalo, would testify that the next evening, so late Sunday night, he saw Lyle pushing an empty refrigerator dolly to the garage. He thought this was weird at the time that Lyle didn't say anything to him, despite them being on very friendly terms. Lyle just was completely zoned out, didn't pay attention to him at all. Obviously, it's been theorised that Leslie was inside that carpet, and Lyle originally placed her body in his SUV before transferring it to the Cadillac and then disposing of it, likely in the dumpsters in Griffith Park. He went back a couple of weeks later to ensure that the dumpster had been empty. Leslie's body may well be in an LA dump, never to be found. In the end, the trial went on for 3 weeks, and at the culmination, the jury found Lyle Herring guilty of the second-degree murder of his wife. On June 7, 2013, he's sentenced to 15 years to life in prison. The DA states following trial that even without Leslie's body, the amount of evidence pointing towards Lyle's guilt was overwhelming. Detective Gable pointed out that had Lyle simply stayed home and not tried desperately to cover his tracks, there's a really good chance this case may never have been solved. It all began with that Starbucks receipt found in Leslie's purse, the surveillance footage showing him purchasing that drink. It planted the seeds, and then he just made more weird, erratic decisions from there. He travelled to Mexico, he cut off his dreads, he handed off his belongings, all in an attempt to cover his tracks. It just made it really clear that he was trying to hide something. Had Lyle just sat at home and watched TV and waited for things to play out, he may never have been caught. I mean, I'm sure there would have been suspicions, of course, but without Leslie's body, it really was his actions that shone the spotlight on him. It's his actions that made him guilty. That was the entire basis of the court case.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
But despite the guilty verdict, Lyle has never revealed the location of Leslie's body to anyone. He never showed a single ounce of remorse during his sentencing, at which members of Leslie's family read out victim statements. Asha said, "My greatest hope is that my sister's life will not have been wasted, and I know she will live on forever through her family and the lessons she has taught us, and she will forever live through us. Her life, her road, ended in a dark place, and we're hoping that somehow we will be able to find where she is and that those who know where she is will help us find her, find it in their hearts to give us that closure in our lives, for the sake of my mother who has gone through so much." Vivian begged for Lyle to share where Leslie's body is, but he remained silent. Judge Ronald Cohn said, "It is unfortunate that the family in this case cannot find closure. I'm sorry, and there's nothing I can do about that." And so Lyle goes off to prison. He did appeal his conviction on the basis of biased jurors and the credibility of the cadaver dogs, but the appeal was denied and the judgment was upheld. Lyle Herring remains in prison for the murder of his wife to this very day. Leslie deserved so much better than what happened to her. It terrifies me that you can be married to somebody for over a decade and then they can turn around and do this to you. The happiest day of your life, committing yourself to somebody, can end in them doing something so callous, so cruel. I'm not personally a religious person, but I know that Leslie would, so I really hope that she's found her peace wherever she is. And I hope that her family have been able to find an ounce of peace as well in the years that have passed. It's been 10 years since Lyle was convicted, and still there's no sign of Leslie's body. This case is closed. Lyle has been convicted of Leslie's murder. Her murder is solved, but her body has not been found. If you happen to know anything about this case, please do not hesitate to contact the authorities, because the Herrings, they just want that last little bit of closure. They want to be able to bury Leslie properly. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Thank you for choosing to spend this time with me and with Leslie and with her story. This really does go to show how the tiniest thing in a case can blow it wide open, how the tiniest thing can provide that last puzzle piece. I say it all the time in my unsolved cases, but it truly can be just as simple as that. And I will see you in the next one. Bye, guys.